Let us begin with a statement that I am sure you must have heard before. God is dead. You are right if you take it that I am serious about this. But what do I mean? When Pascal died, a scrap of paper was found in the lining of his coat. On it was written, "The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not the God of the philosophers." Pascal was a contemporary of Descartes in the 17th century, and the God who appears in Descartes' Meditations on First Philosophy was the paradigmatic philosopher's God. He is, of course, omniscient, omnipotent, and omnibenevolent, and he is designed precisely so as to guarantee that everything that Descartes says is true. So Pascal had a very good example near at hand. Here is what I mean when I say that God is dead. The God of the philosophers is dead. This God is dead because he is a creature of metaphysics, that type of metaphysics, and metaphysics is dead. Subheading 1. Living with a dead metaphysics. You realize that this point is not exactly new. It was precisely Kant's message about the metaphysics of his time. But even Kant's monumental work was not unambiguous in its impact. The truly critical part of his first critique was the transcendental dialectic. There, Kant exposed the illusions of reason, the way in which reason overreaches itself in traditional metaphysics, and the limits of what can be achieved within the limits of reason alone. Here, the unacknowledged presuppositions behind traditional metaphysics were brought to light through antinomies and paradoxes that this metaphysics was powerless to resolve. Given this work, it should never have been necessary again to go about demolishing the metaphysical enterprise. But on one hand, Kant's arguments were not faultless, and on the other, there was a positive part to Kant's project that, in his successors, engendered a new metaphysics. About a century later, the widespread rebellions against the idealist tradition expressed the complaint that reason had returned to its cherished illusions, if perhaps in different ways. There was more to Kant's message. Somehow, in between the critical part and the part that engendered a new metaphysics, so to speak, Kant directed us to a practical question for philosophy. If reason has, after all, such distinctive limits, is it not all the more important to look into what else there is to our existence besides reason? We are right today to see the 19th century idealists as prey once again to illusions of reason. But it is also true that they listened to that additional challenge. That accounts, I think, for a sense of loss still felt when we look back to the, in other respects, necessary demise of idealism. What we lost was precisely the way idealism was, after all, not just a return to that discredited form of metaphysics. Since a good deal of philosophical and theological activity today is clearly within precisely that type of metaphysics, you may not believe in its demise. You may not wish it either. You may have reacted instinctively with, "But to reject metaphysics is automatically to say that God does not exist, that the divine is a fiction or mere myth." That was certainly one reaction to Kant. It has also its secular parallels. But to reject metaphysics, is that not also to reject the very concept of a person, a conscious being, and to settle for the spiritually anemic tastes of scientism? I do not believe so. I reject metaphysics, and still I'll say that you exist and that you are a person, a conscious being. Of course, what it is to be a person and what consciousness is are both topics in metaphysics and have metaphysical theories written about them. So am I at once inconsistent? Only if these assertions about your existence can't be true unless some metaphysical theory about them is true, some metaphysical underpinning, as one says. But I see metaphysical concoctions not as underpinnings, but as the canopies of Baroque four-poster beds. Metaphysical theories purport to interpret what we already understand to be the case.